Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the Global Vision for Living Today radio show program. So happy to have you with us. I know you missed us last week. There was a little glitch there, but it probably won't happen again. And if it does, just know that we're going to hop right back on the air the following week to help you make your life worth living. And that's the topic for today. How can I make my life worth living? Part 5. You know, man has come to realize that he is a created being and not one formed out of nowhere. No wonder problems abound in the world and without guidance from the source of his creation. He is but doomed to live a life complacent along with unhappiness. How can man make his life worth living? Well, some are saying that people need to stop following the dead folk. Some tend to feel that many are just wandering around with no hope for tomorrow and following them made of flesh and blood. That's not a good idea. Some are saying, well, you know, they listen to the same old voices with no action or renewal. But, you know, we found out a long time ago, some of us, that you must be born again, which means you must change your course in life. Some are saying surrender to the creator of creation now. Well, let's hear some answers. We have, from what I see here, Dr. William Colonel Harrison on the line with us. Good morning, sir. How are you today back there?
Good morning, Dr. Capitino, listening audience. Doing well, considering the circumstances, considering the pandemic, and by the grace of God, still above ground.
Well, you better stay above ground because we know you have answers to help people realize how to make their life worth living. It's just that seems to be critical right now because of the virus and so many other things. You know, you can't pick up the paper unless it's a virus. Turn on the TV, virus. Turn on your cell phone to any of the social media portal, virus, virus, virus. My God, you know, you didn't hear this much talk about the 1918 swine flu epidemic, but here we are. People are saying it's not worth it. No matter what I do, I can't seem to get ahead. No matter who I meet, they seem to be shouting. What in the world is going on in the world, not just America, with people saying that, hey, I'm going to give up. This thing called life doesn't seem to be worth living. I'm not getting anywhere. Colonel, how would you answer someone that feels that way?
How to make life worth living? Well, Doc, there has to be a change, more especially now than ever before. We have to adapt. We have to adjust to the elements that are before us, the circumstances that are before us, the season that is before us. So whatever we've been doing in the past, in light of this pandemic, we have to adapt, adjust, and make changes in our lives because the changes that we make will determine whether we have longevity in life, whether we live beyond this pandemic. And I'm just using the pandemic as a backdrop because it's before us. And so the politicians are rethinking what needs to be done in the United States and the ways of living, coming out with new rules, guidelines, regulations, so forth, social distance, shelter in place, all those kinds of things. We individually, as a people, American citizens, need to make a change in our lives because some of us have not been best by ourselves in some of the decisions we have made in the past. So this is a time of reflection. This is a time of meditation. This is a time to look at what we've done, where we are, and where we desire to be in our lives. This is a time of meditation, reflection, and contemplation in terms of where we want to go if we survive the pandemic from this point on forward.
Well, that is very true. But, you know, there's a governmental force of saying that mankind is headed for another crisis. He's headed for famine, and he's headed for more violence. People are already rioting and looting all over Africa. I mean, what other sound counsel can we talk about this morning to give people hope in tomorrow? Yes, they must change, but like Philip said, I need someone to help me with that. Yes, I'm not living my life according to what maybe someone else might think. I need someone to accept me on that. Well, it's the voices of the men and women that were charged with leading the community, the city, the state, the world at large spiritually. Where are they today?
Considering past history, looking back, looking at where we are presently today in the 21st century, prayerfully looking forward to the future, past history has shown mankind that war is not the answer, only love can conquer hate. Presently, we must reevaluate, reassess where we are and tap into a source that has not only brought past mankind from where they were to present and their descendants, but also tap into a source that's greater than man, that's a higher power than man, and the source that's reaching out and creating and want us to embrace so that we can better our lifestyle, improve our lifestyle, and we can be more loving, more kind, more understanding in terms of helping one another, being our brother and sister's keeper. And so we are not at that point, and we need to be at that point or get to that point right now, because the existence of mankind depends on us being loving, kind, supportive, and helping one another, not only through this pandemic, but moving forward in the future as well. Tap into our source.
Yeah, they're going to have to do it. But let me ask you this, and this is just off the cuff. I don't believe the Savior told anyone to tap in anything. He pulled 12, and he said, follow me. He told them to go out teaching and preaching. So I think where we're leading to now, do we still have some of these modern-day teachers? Because we're not looking out in the world seeing that if that's the case, that the world has been made a better place. I don't think I'm going to wake up one morning and tap into anything because, number one, I'm not going to know how to tap into anything. What am I supposed to tap into? I mean, do I need a teacher? Do I need someone on a spiritual level to lead me and guide me into the type of salvation that I need? I may not be able to wake up and tap in. I don't know how to tap into anything. Can you explain that sentence, tap into this? What is the person supposed to tap into, and then how do they tap? Give us a little bit more instruction on that, Colonel.
Okay, I use the word tap because it's a very simplistic word and mm-hmm. have a very simple meaning. But what I mean is to connect with,
yes, what you mean.
Or to seek or to search to find the source that is called God or Jehovah, Allah, a higher spiritual power, a higher spiritual source, greater than man, greater than woman, greater than child. One has to connect with the innermost higher power, and once one connect with that, then the higher power is the source that will guide and direct and lead us to where it's best for our present lives and where presently perfect for our present life and prayerfully where we will be in the future. So I'm talking about connect, to seek, to find, to identify the higher power, the higher source, whatever you want to call it, the great white hope, or whatever you want to call it, a supernatural being. That's the source I'm talking about to tap into.
Okay, so when you say tap into, you mean seek. I think that's great, because if a person starts seeking, and that was a term since you went there on the Bible, Holy Bible, that was a lot of the semblance of what the early apostles taught and were taught. And the great master told them to seek you first the kingdom, not tap into it, seek you first the kingdom, and all these things that you're asking for and wanting will be granted. Paul used the word seek over 100 times in the scripture. So seeking, that means action. And many people are not really willing to put forth that type of action that it takes to seek out a better way, a better course, a better avenue, a better pathway of coming into a semblance of wholeness. Now, what if a person that says, well, you know, my life isn't worth living. Why should I even start looking for anything? How can we address the people that are waking up this morning and saying, oh, my God, another morning. Oh, my God, I'm still here. Oh, my God, I don't know what to do. Oh, my God, I don't know where to go. How can we help people that feel like that using the backdrop of inspiration? Scripture is great, but how is a person inspired to keep walking in this world of chaos? And you've written a book, The Answer to Civil Unrest. I mean, it is a blockbuster. I mean, a lot of these points are there in the book. Maybe you should talk to us a little bit about your book, The Answer to Civil Unrest, as an answer to that question.
Answer to civil unrest in the land was written upon inspiration and revelation of Holy Spirit about 3 years ago. And the idea is the book is designed to show community leaders, community residents, police, and politicians how they can come together, get along together, work through problems that arise out of controversy involving a police shooting or police arrest of a large-scale people, or whatever the case might be. In order for people to continue to obey law enforcement, there has to be a relationship. So if and when law enforcement does go into a particular community and have to arrest someone for whatever reason, certain communities, crowds gather around to try to intimidate the police. So in order to resolve that, to keep that from happening, the relationship has to be established between the police, the community, the citizens, and the politicians before it gets to that point. So this book has measures in it, and it has guidelines in it, and it has examples in it of how the relationships can be bridged. And it's similar to just bridging friendships. Once we bridge relationships, bridge friendships, then we can get along together. So considering that, we need to bridge together now to survive in light of this pandemic. I see there's some demonstration rising up in certain parts of the nation because people want to go back to work. That is not going to get the answer in terms of getting politicians or governors to reopen the states to the workforce. What has to be done there has to be a relationship. There has to be conversation. There has to be dialogue. But public health has to be considered first. Public health and welfare of the people has to be considered first before people get an opportunity to go back to the workplace. So now the uprising is occurring because there's unrest. So people got to be ministered to by the politicians, telling them the reason why they can't go back to work now, because this invisible pandemic, this invisible enemy, this invisible virus is still here. And so we got to look at that, and the book addresses components and examples and guidelines of how the people can work through these type things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is your book. You have millions that do not run into dialogue with the police. They're law-abiding citizens. They're not out there trying to create a problem. There's a small segment that wants to get involved in this chaos. But for the everyday man and woman that is going around wondering, what can I do to make my life worth living? I'm not dealing with the cops right now. I'm not running down the street naked right now. I'm not in a grocery store trying to rob anybody. I'm sitting in my house. I can't go to church. I can't go to my house of worship. I can't even see my friends. I don't think my life is worth living like that. What is the practicality for that segment of the people?
For that category of people, they have to go back and connect with family, either immediate members of their family or extended members of the family. They have to start with relatives. Originally, society was, and it still is, made of families. So we have to find someone in the family, whether it's the mother who's the matriarch or the father who's the patriarch, or it might be a sister, it might be a brother, it might be a niece, maybe a nephew, maybe an uncle, someone in the family to connect with that you can talk to about your concern and that's wise, that can give you wise advice and encouraging advice and uplifting advice as to how you can better your personal life. Right now, most churches are closed because of the pandemic. So I'm saying start with family. And then from family, you may have some friends or you may have some associates that are wise, that have knowledge and that are inspirational. Those are the kinds of people I suggest that we seek out and that we identify with. And after that, once the church is open again, then, of course, the church is a further outreach of the community where you can go there as well.
Okay, that sounds great, but I'm laying on a concrete flooring, homeless. There's over 600,000 people homeless in America. 600,000 probably don't have a phone. 600,000 probably can't call without a phone to their relatives or people like that. So I'm just wondering, you know, if we're giving that type of advice, how practical is it? And I'm saying that because right now you can't even meet with your own family in your home. And if you're homeless, I know you can't. If you're homeless, you don't have a cell phone to plug in anywhere because that just ain't happening. So that is a good idea to first seek out family. Many don't have family. Many can't even deal with their family. You got thousands and hundreds of thousands of people in foster home. Family is broken down. That was the first thing to go in the 60s with this new sexual revolution, the so-called family. The nuclear family now is where people identify. Two or three friends, one or two classmates I grew up with, my co-worker. Many can't even get to their co-workers. So, we're in trouble if that is what we need to do, because 600,000 would not be homeless if they had a family they could go live with, stay with, or even sleep on their floor. Something is wrong with America. So I think in order for a person to even think about making their life worth living, I like what you said in the forefront. They've got to seek out. And how they're going to do it now, behind closed doors, only God himself. No, but they've got to seek out. They got to hunger for first and seek out those personalities. I wouldn't even call them people. Those personalities that they feel might be best to advise them. You know, you got a lot of people don't want to listen to advice. Even the scriptures pointed to is not going to be open to sound reasoning. So is there any other ways that a person can make their life worth living? They have woke up this morning somewhere. What advice would you have for those people?
The homeless population is a composite of a myriad of society in and of itself. Some people are displaced and homeless because of despair, some because of lack of resources, some because of a sickness, mental illness, or whatever the case might be, some because of adverse circumstances. That category of people, the homelessness, becomes a societal problem that the local, state, and federal government needs to address. Primarily, the local government and state government need to address. The homeless population is increasing because of neglect, because of lack of resources. So that I see that as being a different category that needs to be empowered and taken care of and nurtured and provided for through our social services systems of local governments and state governments and so forth and so on. With respect for those of us that are not homeless, those of us who are in our right minds, those of us that have use of our limbs, those of us who still basically can reason and know right from wrong and know that there are certain things that we're doing are detriment to us, and there are certain people, I still say in our family, we can reach out to. If we can't reach out during this pandemic, there's telecommunications, there's technology, there's the telephone, there's video conferencing, there's free conferencing. There's a way to communicate with people, to reach them and talk to them so you can get some help. If you need some help, you got to seek somebody who can help you. You don't want to seek nobody that's doing bad like you are. If you are doing bad, you want to seek someone who can help who's doing well, doing good in society, that can give you advice how you can better help yourself and live better, live a better quality of life than you presently live it. So that's the way I see it from a community point of view, and that's why I began with family earlier.
Okay, well, we certainly need to tell the people how to do that because they're obviously not doing it. 600,000 from coast to coast is a problem. 600,000 people that are displaced, nowhere to go. They came from somewhere. They at one time had a job somewhere. They were living in some city somewhere. So I'm thinking, well, wow, you know what? That's bad. Even the politicians are saying, they're shaking their head. Where did they come from? Say, where did these people come from if they're homeless? They came from somewhere. And now we have another population of people that have been let out of prison. I mean, some of those men and women cannot go back to a home. Some of them have no home to go back to. Some of them have no parents to say, oh, open up, let me lay down. They don't have that. So the element of reaching out from a point of 600,000, and that's just on paper. And I'm moving to another area. Do you think as a minister also, because you are a pastor, do you think maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago that if the message of hope and salvation and love would have been talked and preached and preached on the housetop, do you think 600,000 people just in America alone would be roaming around homeless? It seems to me that there's been a serious disconnect in reaching the human spirit. Forget the flesh and blood. You've got to reach the spirit first inside a man. That is what is going to make him have his being and movement in the world. Do you think that there's some serious disconnect with our spiritual element and the human component of sharing love? I think so. I don't think you'd have 600, almost a million people laying around homeless and the rest running around committing suicide. All suicide rates in all states are up. If there would have been the proper teaching and showing by example how to live a life worth living. Do you think that, Pastor? I'm calling you Pastor now on that one.
Teaching, giving hope and inspiration, encouragement, and so forth was one aspect of it that perhaps could have been emphasized more than it has been in past years, past 5, 10, 15 years or whatever. Certainly that expand during my 10-year ministry, 20 years, teaching one aspect of it, one component of it, for Dr. Coppertino. The other component of it is if one has to be open to teaching, willing to seek teaching, because what has happened, transitional period of 5, 10, 15 years, there's a tendency where people have turned away from structural teaching that can build them up spiritually to seeking that which is in the world that's materialistic. And so as a result of choosing to seek materialistic things rather than to seek spiritual things, to get the spiritual man, the spiritual woman, the spiritual child intact first, has led to the desire and the seek for material wealth and material resources and so forth. Thus, they're turned away from the teachings which most churches either offer or are supposed to offer. And so the substitute leaning into one's own understanding has caused one to seek material resources rather than to seek the spiritual nourishment that is needed to sustain a person first.
Oh, my God, very good answer. Oh, my God, you hit it on the nail. So this is a twofold thing. If a person is feeling that his life is not worth living, I think from what I heard, you're saying that we can't just pin the tail on the donkey, so to speak, and blame the pastors for not really being on their job, because we know Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel and Daniel said that the modern day shepherds were going to be asleep at the wheel. They were going to be clothed in silver and gold raiment with coins scattered at their feet and asleep at the wheel, meaning that they weren't going to put the interest of the so-called flock. They were told that to do that. They have not done that. And so do you think many people should, when you mention turn around their life, should they seek out the modern day minister? Most of their churches is closed, and most you can't even talk to unless you show up on Sunday. They're not going to have anything to do with you through the week. I mean, do you really think that this is a two-way thing of looking at how one's life can be made better, so that when they get up, they don't say, well, at noon, I'm going to kill myself. At 2 p.m., I'm going to walk out in front of some oncoming traffic. At 12 midnight, I'm going to take a shot of poison. I mean, do you think this is something that both sides of the fence, the so-called spiritual leader, because let's forget the politicians. They got their hands full. They're handing out food and drink. Food and drink. That's what they're handing out. But the great one that walked over 2,000 years ago said, hey, I'm not about that. I'm here to give you the spiritual food. And I think the major prophets were on that same thing, too. They were warning the people, every one of them, major prophet, minor prophet, that was their job. They come out of captivity and they went crazy. Right now, in 2020, you mentioned this plague, this virus. Are you saying that there's hope in the near future for a person to really turn their lives around in the condition? I don't know about the 600,000 that are laying homeless. Now that's something for the politicians to deal with. That's flesh and blood. Do you think there's any hope, not just for America, but for the world?
Yes, there is hope, God. The unique thing about pandemics, the last one I understand was 1918, and hundreds of thousands of people literally died worldwide. Pandemics, mm-hmm. I've been studying, doing the homework. Pandemics makes us all equal. The high, the low, the rich, the poor, because that disease, the virus, doesn't discriminate in the pandemic. It affects everyone across the board, without respect to color line, race, gender, whatever, educational. It crosses all those barriers, and it affects everyone. So it puts us in a position where, in a sense, we're not helpless, but we have to connect and help one another and support one another. And if I have some clothes or I have some bread or you can't get to the grocery store or whatever, then I should be a good neighbor and share that with you. It makes us all equal in the sense of understanding that our survival depends upon one another, notwithstanding whether you're my next door neighbor and I haven't spoken to you for 5 years or so. We're now on the same level, experiencing the same challenges, experiencing the same threat from this virus, and so it brings us closer together, and it causes us to band together, and it'll make us stronger, those of us who survive this pandemic, once we get through it, and once it lifts from the earth, and we move forward into the future. We'll be more loving, be more kind, be more understanding, more supportive, and we'll be a better people as a race. And when I say race, I'm talking about the human race.
My goodness. On Tuesday, April 21st, the same channel call-in, 7 p.m., we're going to hear more from Dr. Colonel William Harrison. I'll be on there, too. But you're going to hear a one-on-one, more personal piece of content. I'm not going to give you the title, but just show up at the same time to hear from Dr. Colonel William Harrison. He's going to be having a discourse all on his own. You'll be shocked at the title. And of course, you can always reach him by Amazon.com, getting his book. You can reach him that way. And then, of course, you will hear more about the forms of contact this Tuesday, April 21st, 7 to 8 p.m. Dr. Colonel Harrison with a special message for America and, of course, the world. Thank you so much for tuning in. God bless you. We love you. Just know that you can make your life worth living. He said, seek ye first the kingdom. God bless you. See you Tuesday.